Today, I'd like to present to you today some work that I did with one of my PhD students, Ibad Amazadeh, on authentication on the go. And we were interested in finding out what happens when people move around while they're typing on a mobile device. So I think that we can all kind of understand the motivation for this. It's a mobile device because we're mobile with it. We take it with us, we walk around with it, we sit, we stand, we're on buses, we're on trains, we're on cars, and we're moving about. In yesterday's session, Anne-Marie was talking about the cost of authentication, and she wasn't just talking about money, and she wasn't just talking about time. She was talking about effort and cognitive load, and what happens to our cognitive load when we have to think about what we're doing, whether it's walking or typing or whatever. So what we really wanted to find out is that although keystroke dynamics has been shown to be kind of distinctive, and I say this kind of not as a slam on my research fellows and everybody who's doing work in this field, but it's just an artifact of the type of biometric that we've got. When you have a behavioral biometric, it has two parts. It has a physiological part, so the size of my hands will affect how well I can type. But it also has a behavioral part or a learned part, and it's that part that causes this great amount to kind of shift in whether or not we can use it as an authenticator. So we wanted to know how bad does it get when people move around while they're typing? Can we still tell who they are? Can we still use keystroke dynamics, or is all kind of lost? So what did we do? Well, we got people into a lab, and we made them walk around and type. And our IRB almost had a fit. They're like, wait, you're going to get people to walk and type at the same time. And you're sure nobody's going to die, right? And I can tell you, no, nobody did, which is good. We also got them to sit down and also to stand while they were typing so that we could assess how things changed over time. And what happened? Well, when we just naively put all of that data into a machine learning classifier, it failed dramatically. And I'll show you just how dramatically in a couple of slides. It was awful. We basically couldn't tell anybody apart from anybody else. We couldn't even tell whether that same person was seated, standing, or walking. So we changed our approach a little bit. And what we decided to do is, just by dumb luck, because sometimes that happens, we gathered gyroscope data as they were typing. We had really no sort of sense of why we would want to do it, but Ibad said to me, I can gather it. I said, okay. So we happened to gather the gyro data. So what we did first is we used the gyro data to figure out whether the person was seated, standing, or walking. So that phase one is not identifying the person at all. It's identifying what position they're in. Then we trained classifiers for each of the three positions based on that person's data. So we had a sit classifier, a stand classifier, and a walk classifier. And then we just put their keystroke and bigram data into those three classifiers to see whether or not we did better. And I'm happy to say we did a lot better, a lot. So what were our hypotheses? The too long didn't read version of this is that the first one is, can we really tell who's typing just by their keystrokes? And the second one was, can we use just the gyro data to be able to tell what position they're in, seated, standing, or walking? And the third one was, using the gyro data improve our ability to tell who is typing at any given time? So what did our user study look like? We had 36 people in our user study, and we had 32 males and 4 females, which can tell you that we probably had a nice convenient sample from our university, which is true, although they were a little older than the average. I don't know where Ibad dug these people up, but they were a little bit older than your usual 18-year-old undergraduates. When I say that we had 31 experts, I mean we asked them, look, are you an expert on a mobile phone? Because when you ask people, are you an expert on typing, they look like you have three heads. I read an article the other day that was talking about how they don't teach cursive writing anymore because everybody just types. So the expertise was with mobile devices. We had 3 people who considered themselves average and 2 that considered themselves novices, and none of the people in this study used a feature phone. Everybody used a smartphone, which is great. So the middle diagram that you see there shows what they used in the study to do the typing. So in the first box, we had a phrase that we would get them to transcribe into the second box. So it wasn't quite a free text thing. And the keyboard there is the keyboard that we designed so that we could gather the information that we wanted to get for our study. Because at the time we did this study, we weren't able to use the Google keyboard to gather all of the information that we needed. We had six conditions in the study. So we had sit, stand, and walk conditions, as well as landscape and portrait in each of the six conditions, although we really didn't do anything with the landscape versus portrait. And we had each person in the study go through all six conditions, and we used a 6x6 Latin squares method to allow for learning effects. So everybody did every condition in the study. And the type of data that we gathered, the first was for the gyro data, we gathered just the azimuth, pitch, and roll. And for the gyro data, this was an instantaneous gathering as they pressed the key. So it wasn't anything with, 50 hertz or over time or anything. It was just an instantaneous reading as they pressed the key. For the keystroke data, we used key hold time, which is the amount of time that passes between pressing and releasing a key. And for bigrams, we used interkey latency, which is the amount of time that passes in lifting up from a key and pressing on the next key in the bigram. So how good or bad did it get? So the first here, our position-independent results, was when we just naively took all of our data and chucked it into a classifier and saw what happened, and it was awful. So first of all, the two type of classifiers we use are decision tree, which is DT, and the second one is logistic regression, or the LR. And these are percentages, so false accept rate of nearly 50%, which means you have a pretty good chance of getting in, even if you're not the user. So that was bad. That made us groan. Our area under the ROC curve of only 67%, which you want the AUC to be higher in order to be better, was equally bad. And we were all ready to throw this away and kind of start from scratch when we had the idea of using this gyro data. So the data that you see here is just representing whether or not we could tell the person was in the position. So these don't represent how accurate we were in telling who the person was, but only in what position they were in. We used the same classifiers, the decision tree and logistic regression. And what we found is that we had a nice high area under the ROC curve of 97.3% when we considered sit in particular. But we had some really awful false reject rates, like in the low 20% false reject rates, which meant that it would sometimes get it wrong what position we were in. And the effect of that is that it would look at the wrong classifier when it was trying to classify the data. And this could possibly be an issue, but we didn't explore as part of this study exactly how bad that would get. Would it still tell people apart? We're not really looking at logistic regression because that works best when you have lots of features, and we only have one right here. So when we look at just the keystroke data by itself, we're actually looking pretty good here. We're at a nice 91% area under the curve. We have sub 10% for false accept and false reject rates, which is not too bad, quite terrible for logistic regression, but again, only one feature. When we looked at the bigram results, it was about the same as the keystroke results, which is kind of cool because there has been some other work, including some of my own, thank you very much, that showed that bigrams actually aren't very distinctive on a mobile device. They're distinctive on a regular keyboard, but on a mobile device, we lose that distinctiveness. And I just wonder what I did on that other study, because I'm contradicting my own previous result, because we actually got quite good results. So I'm pretty happy about that. I think it has more to do with the fact that we corrected for position. Because we were getting some nice high rates, like 93.6%, and now we're getting even lower when it comes to false accept and false reject. Again, we're sort of ignoring logistic regression right now. So then we took the keystroke data and the bigram data and we mixed it together, and now logistic regression comes into its own because we have more than one feature to consider. Now we're doing really well, 97.7% area under the curve with nice low false reject rates. They're still not really what I would consider something that we'd want to use for first stage authentication, but really that's characteristic of all behavioral biometrics. But we're getting to the point where we could use this in the background, which is really where I want to go, of transparent authentication. So with those results, how did we do in meeting our hypotheses? Well, because we wanted to have an AUC of at least 90%, which we based on previous work, as well as the idea that we're never going to get as good as, say, a fingerprint in terms of classification accuracy, our AUC of 97% when we use the two types of data together is well above that point. So we have evidence for being able to accept this hypothesis. For our second hypothesis about the gyroscope data, because we got a nice 97.3 and we are over that 90%, we certainly have support that says when we correct, we can figure out what position the people are in. And this is going to help us classify a little bit more. And with hypothesis three, did we get better when we considered the position? Well, yes, or I probably wouldn't be standing up here talking to you about it. So we went from a false accept rate of around, or false reject rate of around 23.3% down to 1.4%. Now, I'm not going to lie, this isn't a straight-on comparison because I'm comparing keystroke-only data to keystroke plus bigram data. Okay, so I understand that limitation. But we got a lot better, a lot better. And it wasn't just down to the combination of the two features because it only made a slight difference when we combined them. So, and our false accept rate got a lot better too. So I would say that we have really good evidence for being able to accept this hypothesis as well. Now, every study like this has limitations and we're no exception. So the first is, sit, stand, and walk. People do other things. They lay down. They're on a train or a bus or something like that, but we had to limit it. This was a lab study, and I didn't want our IRB to get even more angry. We're going to put people in cars and get them to type while they're driving. So we didn't do that. We also didn't look at the range of sit, stand, and walk positions. So in particular, when they were doing the study, people would prop their arms on the desk and type. When they were seated, they would lean against the wall. And when they were walking, they walked like this. They walked really slowly because they were focused on the typing, which was their main task, as opposed to the walking. And so we've lost a little bit of ecological validity when it comes to those things. We also had a custom keyboard, and we used transcribed text instead of a free text task. And we also disabled predictive text and autocorrect so that we got raw keystroke data instead of something that was overcorrected. So what would we do in the future? Well, we want to do a longitudinal study to try to get rid of some of those limitations that I just discussed and to be able to do a prototype of our system to see if we can expand things into different positions. So with that, I will thank you very much and ask for your questions.
Hey, again, if we have questions, please come up to the mics.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for the shout-out at the beginning. It's good for them to know I do something besides Harry Potter and cybersecurity, even if it does make for an award-winning poster. I really like this research. Typically, when you use those more effective biometric methods, you actually have to train the device to recognize your fingerprint. Have you looked at trying to set a baseline for a subject like this is what they look like standing, sitting, walking, instead of, you know, so you don't start from trying to recognize all those without the baseline.
So the three trained classifiers were the baseline. That was the model. That would be okay. The model of the person's data. And what we would be classifying is the instantaneous data that we're gathering to see whether we can filter it into that sit, stand, or walk first. So there's always going to be two classifiers, but the model would be trained. Each of those three models would be trained on one person's data.
Hi, Sri, University of Washington. Great work. Just one question. Why did you choose, or do you have keystroke dynamics over, say, touch-based dynamics?
Because at the time that we really started this work, the whole touch thing hadn't really taken off as much. There weren't as many apps. Now I'm really dating this research, but there weren't as many apps that were truly touch-based, and typing was one of the major things that people did on the mobile devices. So I was talking to, I think it was one of the speakers from yesterday about how keystroke dynamics is really more of something based on touch now than it ever was before? And do we really care about the sort of traditional metrics that we gathered from this type of keystroke dynamics on this type of device? So that's one very interesting thing that we're going to be looking at going forward, is can we just sort of make it touch instead of keystroke?
When you're training your classifiers, does it matter the type of the input, for example, text or password input? I assume the passwords, maybe people type them slower than, you know, regular.
Right. So we were really interested in what we call free text or dynamic text, which is gathering it in the background as people go about other things. And while password hardening, which is taking how people type a password, the keystroke dynamics as they type a password, is kind of a really popular thing, you can't use it continuously. You can't say, okay, after they've authenticated, is it still the same person that I authenticated a moment ago? So that's why we moved away from the fixed text tasks into the free text tasks.